Happy Nurses Week to all the nurses and future nurses listening. To celebrate, I'm having a 20% off sale on Study Sesh. This is my private podcast that features over 140 episodes to help you study on the go. Formats include pod quizzes, power hour deep dives, drills, and case studies. If you're tired of sitting at your desk or staring at a screen, but still want to review for nursing school, it's time to check out Study Sesh. Go to straightanursingstudent.com and click on courses in that top menu bar. That's straightanursingstudent.com and click on courses in the menu bar. See you there. Well, hello, hello. I'm Nurse Mo, and this is the Straight A Nursing Podcast, where I teach concepts and share tips on how to thrive in nursing school and at the bedside. Thank you so much for joining me here today. And before we dive into our topic, which covers one of the most common healthcare-associated infections, let's take a quick minute for a listener shout-out that goes out to Danae, who says this: MedSurg Solution is a great resource to bridge concepts covered in pathophysiology to material that is talked about in MedSurg courses. This has helped me with my exams and being able to find related topics. It's a great resource to use during a nursing program and to prepare for your MedSurg clinical. Thank you so much, Danae, for sharing your experience with MedSurg Solution, and I am absolutely thrilled that it is helping you in your nursing school program. If you'd like to see what Danae is talking about, I will put a link in the episode notes so that you can check out MedSurg Solution. So today, again, we're talking about a really common healthcare-associated infection, and I promise I have been practicing pronouncing this so that the pronunciation police don't come after me. Please be kind if I get it wrong. It's really hard to say, and it's Clostridioides difficile. The name changed somewhat recently from Clostridium to this even harder to pronounce word. So let's just call it C. diff, and we'll all agree that we know what we're talking about and we'll move on. Okay, ready? So let's start with just a brief overview and a bit about the pathophysiology of C. diff. So C. diff is an anaerobic spore-forming bacillus that causes a serious bacterial infection in the colon. It is spread through the fecal-oral route, and once it's ingested, the spores travel to the small intestine where they become vegetative, and then onto the colon where they reproduce and release toxins. And it's the toxins that cause severe inflammation and the symptoms associated with a C. diff infection, also known as CDI. So toxin A attracts neutrophils and monocytes, clearly a big component of that inflammatory process. And then toxin B weakens the epithelial cells of the colon and is thought to be the main contributor to the symptoms. Now, because the spores can survive outside the body for months and are resistant to many disinfection procedures, C. diff is highly transmittable unless very, very stringent infection control measures are taken. Now, the good news is healthcare-associated CDI or C. diff infection has declined in recent years, but it does remain one of the most common healthcare-associated infections in the United States. However, rates of community-acquired CDI have almost doubled in the past 10 years. So let's talk a little bit about how C. diff infection occurs. So in addition to being spread from person to person or from contaminated items in the environment, remember those spores can survive in the environment for months. A key way that CDI occurs is with antibiotic use. So when a patient takes certain antibiotics, the antibiotic kills off those good bacteria that live in our intestines, allowing C. diff to proliferate. And when they proliferate, then they're going to attach to the mucosa in the colon, they produce those toxins, and cause those associated symptoms of infection. However, if that diverse intestinal flora or that good bacteria is present, this can actually prevent C. diff from proliferating in the colon and causing symptoms. So the short version is certain antibiotics are going to contribute to the patient being at risk for the development of a C. diff infection. So who is most at risk for C. diff infection? Again, it's going to be individuals taking certain antibiotics. This includes clindamycin, cephalosporins, such as ceftriaxone, that's a very common one, carbapenems, such as meropenem, and fluoroquinolones, such as levofloxacin. Now, not only are C. diff strains resistant to these antibiotics, they also disrupt that normal intestinal flora, making room for that invasive pathogen to proliferate, release toxins, and cause all that inflammatory chaos in the colon. Some other risk factors for CDI or C. diff infection are the use of proton pump inhibitors. However, the clear link between why this happens has not yet been firmly established, but we do tend to know that there is a causal relationship. Also, just being in a healthcare facility of any kind puts someone at risk. This includes long-term care as well. And then comorbidities such as inflammatory bowel disease, rheumatoid arthritis, chronic renal disease, liver disease, and diabetes, those kinds of things are going to put the patient at higher risk. Being of female gender, being of older age, being immunocompromised, and the last one, having a previous C. diff infection. So again, most at risk is going to be your patient taking some specific antibiotics, and the ones that are tend to be the most common are going to be ceftriaxone, which is a cephalosporin, clindamycin, carbapenems like meropenem, and fluoroquinolones such as levofloxacin. All right? Okay, so now let's take a quick peek at the complications of C. diff infection. So C. diff causes, again, that very serious bacterial infection in the colon. And what happens with this is the patient experiences severe diarrhea and abdominal pain. Complications of this condition include increased length of stay, dehydration, that's a big one to watch out for, acute renal failure, bowel perforation can occur, toxic megacolon can occur, the patient could have ascites, they could have an ileus, and interestingly, it could even cause an inflammatory arthritis. Very severe forms of C. diff can even lead to sepsis, and it has been known to cause patient death. In fact, studies show that hospitalized patients with a C. diff infection are twice as likely to die when compared to those without an infection. It affects about 500,000 patients in the U.S. each year, with death occurring in 30,000 of those patients. That is an astounding number of patient deaths. So now that you have a little bit of background information about C. diff, let's go through it using the Straight A Nursing Latte Method so you can have your thoughts all organized so that when it comes time to recall this information on an exam or in the clinical setting, you can pull it up quickly. So the first letter is an L, and that stands for look. How does the patient look? Basically, what are the signs and symptoms? So the main indicator of a C. diff infection is the presence of 3 or more loose stools in a day. And just so you are aware, that would be the minimum. It can be up to 15 times per day when severe. So again, it's the presence of 3 or more loose stools in a day that is not explained by something that the patient is taking or some other disease process. It has to be this unexpected, unexplained loose stools or diarrhea. So for example, if your patient is taking lactulose and they have 5 loose stools in a day, does that mean they have C. diff? No, that means they're taking lactulose, which causes very frequent and loose stools. Some antibiotics just cause diarrhea as a side effect. That doesn't mean the patient has C. diff. It has to be kind of this unexplained presence of those loose or even watery stools. And the minimum number is 3 in a 24-hour period. Now, other signs and symptoms include abdominal pain, abdominal cramping. The patient could have abdominal distension. They may have a fever. They could have loss of appetite. And as the condition progresses and becomes more severe, the patient can have electrolyte imbalances and signs of dehydration, which would be hypotension, tachycardia, fatigue. And in some cases, the condition progresses to sepsis or other complications as listed above, such as that toxic megacolon or the ileus and things like that. So in general, the patient is going to have 3 or more loose stools in a 24-hour period and abdominal pain. Now, the next letter in the latte method is an A, and that stands for assessment. So how do you assess a patient who has a C. diff infection? So one of the things that you really want to keep an eye on is bowel movement frequency. Note that diagnostic criteria are, again, at least 3 unformed or loose stools in a 24-hour period. And again, most patients with a C. diff infection will have this many and probably more. So we're looking at the frequency. We're also looking at the stool characteristics, and we do that utilizing something called the Bristol Stool Form Scale. And generally, only stool at a Bristol 5 or higher, which is on that looser end, is going to be sent for C. diff testing, and that is usually dictated by your facility protocols. However, I did find a 2015 study that suggested that stools lower on the Bristol scale, so a little more formed, may have detectable C. diff infection if the patient is symptomatic with frequent bowel movements. So we have bowel movement frequency, we have the stool characteristics, and we're using the Bristol stool form scale for that. Another thing you want to keep track of is the patient's I's and O's. How much is coming out versus how much is going in? And, you know, if you feel really sassy, you could put that watery stool into a graduated cylinder or a marked cylinder and keep an eye on exactly how much fluid the patient is losing. You, of course, want to also keep track of how much is going in so that you can monitor their net fluid balance. Another key assessment is to perform an abdominal assessment, making note of abdominal distension, abdominal pain, abnormal bowel sounds, and tenderness with palpation. And of course, you're monitoring vital signs. The patient may be febrile, and if dehydration is present, hypotensive and tachycardic. Also, an elevated respiratory rate should never be overlooked, as it is an early warning sign of sepsis. So again, assessments, bowel movement frequency, characteristics, I's and O's, abdominal assessment, and monitor key vital signs. The next letter in the latte method is a T, and that stands for tests. So what tests would you expect to be ordered for your patient who has a C. diff infection? So one is a stool sample, and that is typically going to be conducted per facility protocol. Note that some facilities will have predetermined exclusion criteria and will not test stool for C. diff infection if the patient has been using laxatives, for example, or has another explained cause for the diarrhea. Another test is an abdominal x-ray or a CT scan, and that would be indicated if the patient was experiencing complications. And then a CBC could show an elevated white blood cell count in your patient with this bacterial infection. Other tests include a BMP, or basic metabolic panel. That's going to allow us to monitor electrolytes because electrolyte imbalances can occur, and it's going to give us information about kidney function. We're looking at the BUN and creatinine because, again, acute renal failure can occur. Let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about treatments and key patient education. If there is one thing that nurses and nursing students need less of, it's stress. And that's just one of the reasons I love Factor. I basically eat stress-free, and you can too. Every fresh, never frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Even on my busiest days, I have 2 minutes. And the best part is you can choose from a weekly menu of 35 options that fit your lifestyle, including calorie smart, keto, vegan and veggie, or protein plus. They also have more than 60 add-ons to choose from every week, so you can get breakfast and snacks covered too. And since the weekly meals are delivered on your schedule, you get as much or as little as you need. So dial down the stress and get started with Factor today. Head to factormeals.com/nursemo50 and use code nursemo50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code nursemo50 at factormeals.com/nursemo50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Head to factormeals.com and stress a whole lot less. So the next letter in the latte method is a T, and that stands for treatments. So what are the treatments for a patient with a C. diff infection? When possible, the most important thing that we can do is to stop that triggering antibiotic. So getting that discontinued, the patient may be switched to an antibiotic that's less likely to contribute to C. diff infection. So that would be one of the most important things that we can do. That's called source control. It may not always be possible, but hopefully it is an option for your patient. Other key treatments include giving the patient antibiotics. Yes, I know antibiotics can cause C. diff. We're going to give them antibiotics that are effective against C. diff, such as fidaxomicin, vancomycin, or metronidazole. Now, patients with recurrent C. diff infection may receive the monoclonal antibody bezlotoxumab along with an antibiotic. Another treatment is fecal transplant, and this may be utilized with recurrent C. diff infection, and it's meant to restore healthy gut microbiota. So the transplanted stool is usually administered via a colonoscopy, but may also be administered via a nasogastric tube, a capsule, or an enema. Stool can be transplanted from an individual who has not had any antibiotic exposure for at least 6 months, is not immunocompromised or at risk for infectious disease, and is free from chronic GI disease as well as communicable diseases such as hepatitis or HIV. If colonoscopy is being used for that transplant, the patient will need to undergo bowel prep prior to that procedure. Another key treatment is to replace fluids and electrolytes as needed to prevent hypovolemia and electrolyte imbalances. Some resources suggest supporting nutrition with a low-residue diet of foods that are lower in fiber and that don't stimulate a lot of bowel activity. And foods on a low-residue diet would be things like white rice, refined pasta, meats, banana, applesauce, eggs, things like that. It's also really important to maintain skin integrity, especially in your incontinent patients. This includes keeping the skin clean, keeping it dry, utilizing absorbent pads, and a barrier cream such as Boudreaux's butt paste. Now, when severe unresolved illness or toxic megacolon or bowel perforation occur, that's going to require surgery that often includes a total colectomy, so removal of the colon, and the creation of an ileostomy. Probiotics is another possible treatment. They may be utilized to help preserve the gut microbiota when taking antibiotics, though there is no overwhelming evidence that it's effective in the prevention of CDI in the studies that I found to create this episode for you, but you will see them used. And you know what? I say it can't hurt, right? So have some probiotics. Antidiarrheal medications are not generally utilized with C. diff infection because it has long been recognized that slowing down peristalsis may allow the pathogen to have increased contact with the mucosal epithelium, leading to increased complications. However, this is being studied further, so it's possible there could be a shift here. You could see anti-motility agents used in some patients. And then the big treatment for C. diff infection is prevention of transmitting the infection, and that involves enhanced or special contact precautions. At my facility where I work, it's called enhanced contact precautions. Other places may call it special contact precautions. Just know that it is your contact precautions, plus we're kicking it up a notch. So we'll use these enhanced or special contact precautions to prevent the spread of infection and should be initiated upon suspicion of a C. diff infection. Don't wait for the lab results to come back. Most facilities protocol have it in there that enhanced or special contact precautions are initiated once the C. diff infection is suspected. So these enhanced precautions include using soap and water for hand hygiene, not using the foam. And it's important to understand that soap and water doesn't kill the spores, alcohol doesn't either, but washing with soap and water provides friction, and this is what removes the spores from the skin. We're physically removing them. We're also using special disinfectant wipes that contain bleach to clean items in the environment. In addition, your patient with C. diff infection should be in a private room with a private bathroom that is only for their use. But if a private room is not available, cohorting may be possible with another patient who has a C. diff infection until a private room becomes available. And again, this will depend on your facility protocol. In addition to using soap and water for hand hygiene, healthcare workers and anyone coming into the room should don a gown and gloves. Now, in some facilities, enhanced contact precautions remain in place for about 48 hours after the resolution of symptoms. However, studies show that the shedding of C. diff bacteria actually increases after the treatment ends. So don't be surprised if you see a continuation of enhanced contact precautions all the way up to discharge or even 1 to 4 weeks after the treatment ends, depending on which comes first. And then the final letter in our latte method is E, and that stands for education. How are we going to educate our patient, our family, their visitors? So one of the most important things to teach your patient, their family, their visitors in that clinical setting is about infection prevention. This includes everyone coming in the room donning a gown and gloves upon entering, and everyone using soap and water upon entering and upon exit to remove the spores from their skin. Other key teaching elements include CDI or C. diff infection prevention. So teach patients to avoid antibiotic use if there is no indication for antibiotics, such as with a viral infection. If antibiotics are indicated, patients should be instructed to take the full course of antibiotics to avoid the development of resistant bacteria. Can you imagine how difficult it would be to treat a CDI infection that was resistant to bacterial therapy? Another key teaching element is hydration. C. diff infection can cause large volume losses, so patients should increase their PO intake to avoid dehydration, and in some cases, IV fluids will be necessary. You also want to teach your patient to watch for recurrence. If diarrhea returns after symptoms have resolved, it's really important the patient let their physician know, as this could indicate a recurrent infection. It's also really important to teach proper hand washing. Teach patients to use soap and water. They should lather for 15 to 30 seconds. I like to teach people to sing happy birthday one or two times, and then rinse under running water with their fingers pointing down so the spores can run off down the drain. Next, they should pat their hands dry with a paper towel and then use the paper towel to turn off the faucet and then place the paper towel into the garbage receptacle. For patients at home, teaching them about laundry. They should wash linens and clothing that has been soiled by stool infected with C. diff separately from other items. They should use hot water, detergent, and bleach if the fabric will take it. And then cleaning at home is really important. They should clean the bathroom at home with a mild bleach solution. Again, bleach is going to get at those spores. And they should especially focus on items that have been in contact with stool, such as faucet handles, flush handles, and doorknobs. And while you're at it, you might as well go around the house and clean often touch items like light switches and, again, doorknobs. So there you have it, your overview of C. diff infection, one of the most common healthcare acquired infections in the United States. And as you can see, it's not just diarrhea. It can actually be dangerous for your patient. They can have serious consequences. I hope you're going to keep a really close eye on your patients and feel more confident when caring for them. Now, C. diff does have a distinctive odor, which I didn't mention earlier. I've got an episode on how to kind of gracefully manage strong odors in the clinical setting. I'll put a link to that in the episode notes. And that is episode 105. I really hope to see you back here next week. And if everything goes according to plan, we'll be diving into a bit of an overview of some common pediatric GI disorders that you'll be learning about in your pediatric course. See you then. This podcast is brought to you by Straight A Nursing, a proud member of the Airwave Media Network. For more educational podcasts, check out airwavemedia.com. And for more nursing-related content, go to straightanursingstudent.com.